Ethnic profiling in Northwest Nigeria. As acts of terror persist in the northwestern region of the country, so do the activities of vigilante groups poised to combat them. This is amid the unsuccessful efforts of government forces to effectively tackle the problem. However, because terrorists operating in the region are known to be mainly from the Fulani ethnic group, this has posed a life-threatening challenge to those who live among law-abiding citizens. Human Angle has reported how this ethnic profiling and stigmatization of the Fulani leads to the deaths of many innocent people while rendering many homeless. But how did the region get here? Are the security forces aware? And how can this be stopped once and for all? Hello, welcome to the Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the continent and ask the tough questions. In this episode, our colleague Nathaniel Bevan engages in a candid conversation with Omar Ndaiti, a seasoned reporter who has delved into the intricate narrative surrounding terror profiling.
Good day, Omar. Welcome to the Crisis Room.
Good day. Thank you for having me, Nathaniel. I am really excited to be with you.
Ethnic profiling is on the rise as terrorism persists in Northwest Nigeria. Can you give us an overview of the situation, being that you are familiar with the region and have done a detailed report about it?
Well, yes, as you have made mention, ethnic profiling is on the rise, and it corresponds to the ongoing armed violence that is ravaging Northwestern Nigeria. Armed violence began across northwestern Nigeria, but specifically in Zamfara, from where it spread to other parts of the region, roughly around 2011. And it continued to expand beyond the borders of Zamfara to neighboring states like Sokoto, Katsina, Kaduna, and even Niger State in the north-central region of the country. At a point during the rise of armed violence, mostly perpetrated by criminal gangs, there emerged a unique, or let me say, different form of vigilantism called the NSAKE vigilantism. The most fundamental philosophy of the NSAKE is that the only way to counter the violence of the terrorists is to launch a greater violence on them. And with this, the NSAKE were able to wield power across the region, and using that power, they started to profile people from the Fulani stock. The reason being that most of the terrorist gangs have their fighters, like the majority of their fighters are Fulani people. Therefore, countering the insurgency of the terrorists, the vigilante groups began to profile every Fulani person, because the terrorists operate using the guerrilla warfare tactic, the hit and run. Therefore, the vigilante find it very difficult to identify who a terrorist is and who is not. And within those contradictions and excesses of the war between the terrorists and the vigilante groups, innocent Fulani people were caught in the web. They were being killed, they were being harassed, they were being displaced from their communities, and they were being extorted by community members and even security agents. So in brief, this is what I would say constitute the general image of the crisis of ethnic profiling in Northwest Nigeria.
Thank you for that. Now, in your latest report in August this year, you showed how Fulanis are also victims of terrorism and that stigmatization they face only doubles their misery. Can you shed more light on this?
What actually happens, or what usually happens, is that, as I have made mention earlier, most of the terrorists, like if you want to understand terrorism in Northwestern Nigeria, you need to understand the formation of the perpetrators, of what I call cycles of perpetrators. The perpetrators of the violence are not simply the fighters, people who go and launch attacks, people who kidnap people for ransom and all that. But there are comprehensive and well-established cycles of perpetrators. Among the perpetrators, for example, are people who supply essential items. I call them conflict entrepreneurs, people who supply essential items to the terrorists in their camps. There are also people who give privileged information to the terrorists. They are usually called informants. And quite a number of other people who are basically seen as innocent people. They support the terrorists. They provide a favorable environment for the terrorists to launch their violence, to wreak their havoc on people. So the circle of perpetrators, if you look at the circle, it constitutes people from different ethnic backgrounds, people from diverse ethnic backgrounds. You can find as many Hausa people among within the circle as you will find Fulani. There are also people from other ethnic minorities, most especially from the north central part of the country. But if you look at the field fighters, you will discover that most of them are Fulani. But the fact that most of the field fighters are Fulani does not mean that every other Fulani person is a terrorist. There are innocent and non-combatant Fulani people who live in their communities, tending their herds of cattle and engaging and going about their daily lives. So these are the specific type of Fulani people that usually get caught within the web of the conflicts between the terrorists and general community members. So if you look at the non-combatant Fulani people, you'll find out that since banditry, or more generally terrorism, began in northwestern Nigeria, they have been the most terrified group of people. Because first, a major aspect of terrorism in northwestern Nigeria is cattle rustling. And these Fulani people have the largest number of cattle in the region. Just between 2011, I think, when the crisis began, and 2019, more than 250,000 cattle were rustled. And also, more than 160,000 other valuable animals, such as sheep, goats, and even hens, were rustled from Fulani communities, pastoral communities. So you see, they have lost a lot from the ongoing violence, due to the ongoing violence. And most of the people who perpetrate this violence on them were the same Fulani fighters that form part of the circle of perpetrators of the violence, right? Then, if you look at while they are still sustaining the trauma and trouble that they have been subjected to due to the rustling of their animals, and due to the fact that they have also variously been victims of kidnapping, violent killing by the criminals, they also have to face another monster, that is the NSAC and the general members of the public. Because due to the rising nature of terrorism in northwestern Nigeria, people began to develop a sort of anti-Fulani sentiment, which was reinforced by the activities of the NSAC. The NSAC, as I have made mention, emerged as a model of vigilantism around 2014, when armed violence reached its peak in the region. And as I have said, their major and deeply held philosophy is that the only way to end the violence of the terrorist group is to counter that violence with even more greater violence. Therefore, the NSAC went about brutally killing anyone they arbitrarily declare as a terrorist. And as I've been mentioned, the Fulani have a sort of unique physique. Once you see a Fulani person, you can identify him. And most of the field fighters of the terrorist groups or circles of perpetrators are Fulani people. And it is very, very difficult to distinguish between the fighters and the innocent people, and the innocent Fulani people who usually go around in the forest tending their cattle or live within pastoral communities going about their daily lives. So this is the kind of melee that the innocent Fulani people found themselves into.
All right, thank you for that. Now, this year, Human Angle did a report, actually in September, where a vigilante group reportedly killed and attacked some herders in a market in Bungudu local government area. And the Zamfara State Police spokesperson said the police wasn't aware of the bad blood against the ethnic group. Would you say the security forces are doing enough to curb this problem?
Well, this problem is a problem that began since around 2014. And since then, it has endured and expanded, not only in Zamfara from where it began, but it has spread to other parts of the region. If we begin with Zamfara, for example, the activities of NSAK reached its peak around 2016. Many eyewitnesses reported incidences that occurred in Zamfara, in Shinkafi, against Fulani people. According to many local sources, the NSAK will storm the market on Wednesdays. They will identify people with Fulani physique and indiscriminately declare them as suspected terrorists or informants. The NSAK, it was reported, would immediately and brutally slaughter the alleged suspects in public, in front of everyone. So, according to one report I've read some time ago, an eyewitness reported that 18 Fulani people were slaughtered in just 2 weeks and on market days. It went to the extent that in Shinkafi local government alone, that is in Shinkafi town in particular, there was a place that was widely known as Human Abattoir by people. And the Human Abattoir was located directly opposite the livestock market in Shinkafi, near the farm of one late Namaisha Shinkafi. I mean, the farmland of one late farmer who is called Namaisha. So you can see how brutal the NSAK were against the Fulani. And it continued this way, spreading it to other parts of the country, because much later, in 2020, similar cases were found in places like Zuru local government of Kebbi State. In the entire Kebbi State, the Zuru, Ripa, Danko, Osegi, and Mahuta axis is the axis that is most affected by terrorism, by the activities of criminal gangs. And in response to that, a vigilante outfit that was codenamed Zaman Lafiya Dole was established in Zuru local government, or let me say in Zuru Emirates generally. And from then, the vigilante outfit became so powerful that it began attacking Fulani people wherever it encounters them. The NSAK will stop vehicles on highways linking towns and villages in the area to fish out and kill Fulani people. According to some residents of Zuru, tens of innocent Fulani people were killed, and some of them were burnt alive. This became really, really outrageous in 2020, when about seven or more Fulani people were killed in a single attack near the Federal Science and Technical College Zuru. And this really led to a serious crisis, to the extent that the national leader of Miete Allah Cattle Breeders Association of Nigeria, Alhaji Muhammad Kirua, who is also from Zuru, was declared wanted by the NSAK, and he had to flee Zuru for his life. And the entire crisis was finally settled during a public hearing in 2020, in which the Inspector General of Police of Nigeria, intelligence chiefs, and even the Kebbi State government were present. People were allowed to voice out their grievances on both sides, between that I mean the divide of the Fulani and that of the Ensake, and the government intervened and a lasting solution was brought to the issue. Also, in 2021, there was an incident I witnessed in Bakuri local government of Katsina State. I personally witnessed this while en route from Sokoto to Kano. At Bakuri, I reached Bakuri around 2 p.m. and the road was literally blocked because there is a market on the road. We were still on the go slow, on the traffic, when a group of NSAK stormed the place, and they had some sort of misunderstanding with the driver who was driving my car. They even threatened to shoot him down, but due to the power of destiny, people intervened and they didn't touch him. So after they passed, people in that place told us that we were very, very lucky because those people are fond of killing people, most especially Fulani people, within that market. On every market day, they come to the market, they survey around. Once they found people with Fulani physique, whether they are most especially men, they slaughter them in front of everyone. And if they encounter women, mostly Fulani women, who bring dairy products to the markets, they seize their dairy products and send them away. So this is a very, very complex issue that was compounded with time due to poor governance and lack of prompt response and accountability on the side of government and security agents.
Okay, so now this brings us to the role of the media. How do you view the role of the media in all of this? Do you think there is a way they can positively impact the status quo?
I think the media has a role to play, even though sometimes it gets tricky, because when I went for interview for my latest report on ethnic profiling, I had to follow my ways to convince the victims that their safety is not at stake, because they thought if they give me information and put out there, it can actually go back to the vigilantes and they will come after them, right? Therefore, they were really, really cautious in terms of that, and I had to convince them that there is no cause for alarm before they agree to share their audience with me. So that is the one of the obstacles. And secondly, there is this problem that the government itself hardly listen to the media. Like, most of the reports that come out demanding the accountability from the government end up using its media aides to counter the reports instead of aides to accept those findings as a way of, as a sort of constructive criticism on which it can mend some of the challenges it is facing. So on a general note, I think the role that the media can play is that of sensitization. Let people be aware that this is what is going on, and let people know that not just this is what is going on, but let them be aware that these are the dynamics of the crisis. At least through that, we will be able to enlighten people that not all Fulani people, for example, are terrorists, and we need to be very careful in terms of how we determine or define who a terrorist is and who is not.
Okay, so I think this leads us to my final question. How do you think the Nigerian government can decisively tackle ethnic profiling? And do you think they can do this without successfully combating terrorism in itself?
What do you mean by successfully combating terrorism? Doing it without successfully combating terrorism?
Okay, so it's a two-way thing. If the terrorists are still active, the people will continue to look for whom to blame. And if there is no solution to the problem, meaning the problem, if it's not properly curbed, if it's not successfully mitigated, we'll still have the same issues of profiling in our hands. So basically, that's what I mean.
Well, I mean, the government, if at all it cares about the citizen of the country, should not simply limit its efforts towards tackling ethnic profiling. I think to limit its efforts to tackling ethnic profiling alone is a little bit cosmetic. And what we need is for the government to tackle the root cause of ethnic profiling. And what is the root cause? It is terrorism and insurgency generally. Therefore, what the government should aim at is tackling insurgency, more appropriately, terrorism in the region. And I think the best way to approach that is to deploy both kinetic and non-kinetic methods of counter-insurgency. If you say you will only maybe deploy dialogues with the terrorists as a means of curbing insurgency, I think that has been done before and it didn't work because the terrorist gangs are many in number and each gang has its own autonomy, and sometimes they even compete among themselves. Some of them are even rivals. So establishing peace or negotiating peace with two or three gangs does not mean negotiating peace with all of the gangs. And it is very, very difficult to have all of the terrorist gangs on the same table for negotiation. Besides, the terrorists find their business very, very lucrative for them because they have built a very strong ransom economy due to their activities of kidnapping. Therefore, the best approach is to decisively launch robust military offensives against the terrorists. The security agencies should not just sit down and wait until when the terrorists attack people or strike government properties. And then that is only when they intervene. No, they should be launching offensives, airstrikes, and even land operations against the terrorists. Meanwhile, the government should look at the root causes of insecurity itself, which include poverty, ignorance, and all of those social crises that the government need to take care of in terms of ensuring that there is quality education across the region, ensuring that the region, which still stands as the poorest region in Nigeria with over 90% of its population living under the poverty data line, has been taken out of poverty through means such as providing employment for the youth, empowerment of women, and other means of ensuring social development and social development. So generally, insecurity will be tackled on these two major planes. There need to be military offensives, but then there also need to be other non-kinetic measures through which the root causes of the problem could be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining the Crisis Room, Umar. Thank you so much for your time. We look forward to having you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was an episode of the Crisis Room by Human Angle. Join us again in 2 weeks. The production team are Hawassala Abubakar, Nathaniel Bevan, and Osman Zanna. The executive producer is Ahmed Selkipa.